I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. A corporate headhunter steals to maintain his lavish lifestyle. Sounds like a news headline, doesn't it? It could be, but it's actually the plot of a Norwegian thriller that our indie, foreign, and documentary film critics review today. We'll also get some reaction to Woody Allen's latest European travelogue, plus some suggestions for great films now available for home viewing. And speaking of streaming, what does Google Fiber mean for the local film community? If predictions are right, it'll benefit both viewers and filmmakers. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Beasts of the Southern Wild tells the tale of a six-year-old girl named Hush Puppy who lives with an ailing father and is searching for her mother. It's low budget, it uses non-professional actors, and it's winning lots of awards. We'll find out why in just a minute as we visit with our art, independent, and documentary film critics. They are film professor Cynthia Haynes. Cynthia, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
And in case you are, Steve Walker. Stephen.
Hi, Steve.
Good morning. And Bob Butler, who writes about film at butlerscinemascene.com. He works at the Kansas City Public Library. Bob, nice to have you, too.
Greetings.
Well, Steve Walker, the opening games of the Olympics are tonight, and it's an Oscar-winning director overseeing the whole thing tonight, right?
It is. It's Danny Boyle has directed and overseen the production of the opening ceremonies. Everyone's saying they can't possibly top Beijing, which I still remember like yesterday, which was also overseen by a film director, Zhang Yimou. I hear from people who've leaked a little bit about what they've seen.
From your inside sources.
London friends. that it really is going to be just a big salute to Britain and the history and the music, including Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Their song Relax, the Eurythmics, classical British music. So I can't wait. I mean, I'll be there watching it.
You know,
tonight.
It's amazing how moments from those opening ceremonies stay with you. Was it Los Angeles where the archer shot the arrow and lit the
wasn't
the
there a mothership that hovered over the stadium in that one? Yeah,
but that was just thrilling. I mean, what a moment. Bob, I'm just wondering, from a very generic standpoint, staging something like the opening ceremonies for the Olympics, that has got to be just an incredible
Well, you
task.
Know, and here's the thing, that in a way it interests me that film directors have become the go-to guys, because a film director's business is to not so much show you as prevent you from seeing what he doesn't want you to see. He's got that frame of reference. Yeah. You know, if you go to see a play, your eye is free to roam all over the stage.
Right.
If you go to a movie, you only see where he points the camera. But in this event, you have a huge – I mean, just calling it a stage doesn't even begin to touch it. We're talking, you know, like three football fields of activity. And I suppose the TV camera guys have been told where to aim and shoot.
Yeah.
But
imagine
you're in that crowd. Talk about a three-ring circus. Right. This is a 50-ring circus.
Yeah. Meredith Vieira said this morning on the Today Show that it is indeed cinematic. And that's about all they would say. So with a mix of that music and the live sheep I hear are going to be there, it sounds crazy.
Yeah.
But it sounds crazy.
Sounds like a Monty Python routine once you mention the live
but
sheep.
But it takes a guy with a great imagination to create something like this, and to have the facilities and the connections to create these villages and all these other things that are going to be going on. I mean, I think they – I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but I'm assuming he was one of the best guys to go to.
How long have they been planning this? Any idea? I mean, when they started sort of beginning
six
to envision?
6 years ago?
Several years ago. There's a very funny series on BBC America called 2012, which is a mockumentary in Christopher Guest style about the creation. And they're saying like 3 years before, and the countdown's 2 years to go. And so I've been watching that and loving that, too.
It'll be fun.
It's been a while.
Well, Steven Stegman, our producer, reminds me it was Barcelona where the archer shot the arrow and lit the flame, and great moments in time.
And remember, last at Beijing, it was the guy walking basically on air around the the rim of the bird's nest to get to the flame. Remember that? He was like walking horizontal with the ground.
Danny Boyle was asked this morning if he felt tremendous pressure because of how spectacular the opening was for in China. And he said he doesn't even think about that. He said, you know, he's just really starting from square one, trying to come up with the best, most exciting opening.
He's an exciting director. Mm-hmm. His films, 127 Hours, was just unbelievably directed, and just the look of it and the speed and the freneticism. So I cannot imagine what's happening
tonight. I think it was Los Angeles when the big mystery was, well, who's going to be the runner, the last runner to light the flame? And it was Rafer Johnson, I think the great decathlon champion. But at one point, Muhammad Ali had the torch, and you're watching at home, and you're like, this is amazing. Great drama.
It's better than the amazing. Oscars.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, well, maybe. Is it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. As far as a show. Yeah. As far as a show, it is.
Yeah.
Spectacle.
Well, Google Fiber obviously is very much in the news these days, and I'm sort of wondering what it means both for film consumers and filmmakers. And for our listeners out there, if you're a filmmaker, might it make a difference to you in terms of how you distribute your films going forward? And if you're a film consumer, maybe you watch a lot of movies online, and is this going to change your life by making it a whole lot easier to watch films at home? Faster service? Are you willing to pay a little bit more to get that service? Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Our email address, updatedate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. Cynthia Haynes, what do you think about filmmakers? Is it going to make a difference? Are we going to see changes here?
I think it might, but the point is, even though we have this incredible service in Kansas City, if we don't have somebody on the other end who has the capacity to download whatever it is you're sending them, you know, what's the point of having the speed?
But some folks think that's going to be coming within months, years for sure. And you were saying just this morning in Lawrence, there's a story in the Journal World that there's a new...
There's a company called Wicked Broadband, and they're providing a service. It's basically around the university, but it's 100 times faster what's available at this point through Knowledgy, which
is the same speed as Google Fiber, I'm told. Yeah.
What's 100 times faster than 1 second? I mean, it's negligible. And I have to say, what I read in the Star this morning is I will never have it. I wouldn't pay 5 cents for Google Fiber because they're not running HBO or AMC with the best television programming
or
going.
ESPN, I'm told.
Oh, yes, right. Well, yeah. I don't watch sports. So.
Although, given the way things work, that could change.
Well,
they might pick them up. My concern, being a Luddite, is that how does downloading a movie in half a second as opposed to the 20 seconds it takes now, is that really changing my quality of life?
Takes me a lot longer to get the film.
But it's also the amount of information that's being transferred. That's one of the major considerations and the reason so many people are looking forward to this.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I just have to add that their first commercial set to the tune of We're Going to Kansas City was beautifully shot, but there's a moment in it where someone's Googling Kansas citizens to get to Harry S. Truman. So it shows me that they have no idea what Kansas City is. And that doesn't bode well at all.
Yeah, that's an issue.
Their billboards are clever.
But so you don't think it's going to make any big difference
not
for filmmakers?
Maybe. I mean,
But it seems to me that so many filmmakers now are just putting their stuff on YouTube.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, there will be there are sites that specialize in helping filmmakers distribute their work, but right now it's all going to YouTube.
Well, right now, one big issue for me with YouTube is that when you click on something that's more than 3 minutes long, you have to wait a
buffer,
while.
Buffer.
And if it's going to load quicker, that might draw a lot more people to YouTube, right?
I'll go with you on that.
We're increasingly getting screeners rather than on DVD. They send us to Vimeo, which is a website.
And, yeah.
Like Bernie, the movie we all liked a lot with Jack Black. We saw that online through this Vimeo thing, and it took, I can't remember, 3-4 minutes to download is all.
Well, you've got someone like myself who lives outside of Lawrence in the country, and I have issues every single day of trying to download information and was frustrated because it took me 3 hours to watch Bernie
It
sat there in buffered.
Well, maybe you should move to downtown Kansas City.
Her house is too cool.
We are told at the library that institutions like libraries will be among the first to go online.
And how will that change your world?
boy, I'm not sure.
You can see some potentials here,
I can
though,
see
right?
some potential, yeah. And but you, what can I tell you? You're talking to an idiot. I don't have an iPhone yet. Yeah, you know, yeah. It's like yeah. I suppose it's going to be a real benefit for our patrons who come in and use our computers.
Right.
Bang! You know,
right.
You got what you want immediately. But as for me, I'll report back to you on that.
Are you intrigued by the service?
I am. I'm curious about what it will actually do. Will it change lives? Not that I'm sure I want my life changed, but, you know.
But in terms of hospitals that will be able to use this and share information, I mean, that was part of the argument, too.
If my medical records could be transferred to a hospital, if I'm brought in the emergency room in a matter of seconds, yeah.
Right.
Let's go, team.
Yeah. Again, our phone number here, 816-235-2888, and our email address, update@kcur.org. Mike from Shawnee, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Enjoy the show.
Great, thanks.
I've spent 45 years in the cable TV business, so if there's any, as I started listening to your show from the top, questions your guests have poised, I think I can probably answer them okay. I mean, trust me, by the time Google Fiber opens for operation, they'll have HBO, they'll have Showtime, AMC, TMC, whatever. I'm sure those contracts, those negotiations are underway. As much as some of the big cable MSOs would love to deny them those services, you know, the services want universal distribution to everybody in the country, every platform. I mean, all that's going to happen, so I wouldn't worry about that. And as far as their speed,
right.
I mean, the U.S. is really behind the curve. I mean, most other Western countries have much higher transmission speeds over their digital service than we do. Plus, they have, you know, they have all kinds of things like the, you know, using your cell phone, your iPhone, your cell phone to buy a Coke out of a Coke machine or something. I mean, they've been doing that in Northern Europe for years. I mean, we're still fumbling trying to find quarters and dollar bills.
This is Cynthia. I have a question. Are the cable companies worried? Are they concerned about Google moving in like this?
Well, you're always concerned when you have a competitor, especially one who seems to have an unfair advantage. But most cable operators that I know, you know, they're willing to compete on a level playing field. And as long as Google doesn't have, for example, a lower franchise fee to the cities
right.
or some other cash advantage, Time Warner and Comcast and others, they're very competitive. And it will be, in my view, the winner will be the retail subscriber because you'll find more services at lower price. I mean, that's what competition does.
I was going to say, Mike, do you foresee companies like Time Warner responding with faster speeds and that kind of thing to offset this advantage that Google has?
Oh, sure. Oh,
yeah.
Sure. If you owned Time Warner, wouldn't you? If you had a major market with a high-speed competitor coming in, you'd be figuring that out right now.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, Mike, I'm glad you called. I appreciate the phone call.
Sure.
Okay. Take care.
Thanks, Steve.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Interesting information there from Mike. Well, let's go to our films here and a film that's been open for a bit. And by chance, if you've seen Beasts of the Southern Wild, a lot of folks are talking about it. We'd like to hear your two cents, 816-235-2888. This is a film about a six-year-old little girl named Hush Puppy who lives in a Southern Delta community, and she's living with her ailing father and searching for her mother. Cynthia Haynes, tell us about it.
Steve, I saw the preview for this film, and I was really stunned. It was visually so exciting, and I thought,
more. Is
this a documentary? I had no idea what kind of film this was, and then I started hearing things about it. Won awards at Sundance at the Cannes Film Festival. It turns out to be a very low-budget film, non-professional actors.
It didn't look that way from the preview,
oh,
did it?
Oh, no, it
yeah.
didn't.
Mm-hmm.
It was directed by a 29-year-old filmmaker, Ben Zeitlin. It's his first feature film, which amazes me because I think it shows tremendous potential as a filmmaker. His cinematographer, and it was a film cooperative that put this movie together.
Meaning?
It was just a group of filmmakers all working as a team, sort of on... on spec, but flying by the seat of their pants. I mean, they were filming as, you know, situations presented themselves. It was shot on 16 millimeter film. which is a reason that it gave the film a certain look and a certain feel. I mean, that just isn't done these days. Everything is shot with a digital camera.
Explain this. So the difference is what? How would you describe the feel of this film compared to a conventional film?
Well, filmmakers were fighting the digital transition for years and years and years, and they said film is warmer, it has greater depth, video is just too sterile. I mean, it's like listening, I guess, to a 45 or 33 and a third record versus, and you hear the clicks and pops and whatever,
right.
But you have a richer sense of that than listening to something that has been digitally recorded and enhanced or whatever. So they've created what I consider a real work of art.
Wow.
Using all these components of filmmaking in a very creative way. Consequently, it's not a film for everybody. I realize there's a very, very limited market for this movie.
Tell me about that. What do you mean?
Well, because it's so strange. It's set in a mythological bayou. It's not a traditional narrative film. There are two major events. There's the illness of Hush Puppy's dad and this flood, and it just surrounds those events. So there's no real beginning, middle, and end what we expect. The non-professional actors I thought were outstanding, but there are elements to it that are a bit amateurish too. So,
Robert,
I think the key to this movie is that it's the view of the world through the eyes of a six-year-old girl, even to the point that the camera is positioned 3 feet off the ground. It's everything that happens is filtered through this child's sensibilities. A six-year-old child does not understand adult illness, which is why the film really doesn't get around to explaining what's wrong with her dad.
And we expect that.
And
you really want to know, where did he go? He disappeared for a while.
You expect explanations in a film from an adult point of view, but children, they don't even know the questions to ask. So some people are going to be frustrated by this because it does not lay it out for you. It lays out lots of clues, but you kind of have to put it all together for yourself in the end.
You're absolutely right. The filmmaker, Zeitlin, in an interview, he's gotten tremendous press. It was in the New York Times. He was asked about making the film and what was he thinking about? What was he curious about exploring? And he said, what is the feeling of going through this loss of a place or of a parent or of a culture? How does that feel? And how do you respond emotionally to survive all that?
Oh, that's so interesting.
And it is. I mean, it's so thoughtful, and this is a movie about something, you know?
At the same time, she's also wondering where her mother is.
Yeah,
is she alive or is she dead? And one of the loveliest recurring scenes in this film is when this little girl who has the most radiant face.
Oh, she's beautiful. Yes. Yeah.
Keeps picking up animals because they're surrounded by shrimp and pigs and dogs.
And you think this is the most impoverished, mm-hmm. Unsanitary environment any child could grow up in, and she considers it a paradise.
Well, what I was saying is she picks up animals throughout the scene and holds them to her ear to listen to their heartbeats. I loved that scene. I didn't love the movie overall. There's a weird kind of chain where these big mastodon-sized boars, B-O-A-R-S, come out of the ice.
And represent her fears?
I don't know.
Anxiety?
I don't think it was well explained.
Well, in a sense, it wasn't well explained. But then, you know, here's a child that grows up hearing all these folk tales. And one of them is of these beasts called aurochs, which, if I'm not mistaken, was actually a kind of ox. But in her mind, they're big pigs with antlers. Mm-hmm. And
so you've got these special effects going on, too, that I think are quite effective.
Well, just interesting hearing the three of you talk is your excitement level. There's a pitch in all your voices that's higher than normally listen, because you guys seem excited about the film.
He's incredibly talented, this director, and he has great potential. I think the emphasis on potential. I think the movie falls apart in the last third, and I just got lost and bored, actually. But the first half hour, setting up the bathtub, this area where they live, the animals, the weird Rube Goldberg-like contraptions they live in, was brilliant.
Hmm.
Yeah. There's a certain irony, because on the first day of shooting, the Deepwater Horizon oil rig exploded in the Gulf of Mexico.
Oh, my gosh.
And Zeitlin said that was a sign from the heavens that this was an important film.
We have a clip here, Cynthia.
Yes, it is actually of the little girl known as Hush Puppy describing what she considers her paradise.
It wasn't no time to sit around crying like a bunch of babies. We're gonna make a camp right on top of the bathtub. Got enough animals to eat until the water goes down.
I should probably point out here that director Zeitlin co-wrote the musical score, which is unbelievable.
Beautiful. It is really beautiful.
And you know what? These people, it's interesting because the bathtub is a community of black people, white people, and then a lot of people who are in between. If some people have actually taken offense, they say this is making fun of poor people or taking advantage of them.
No.
If anything, it's
idyllic.
It's fantastic. I don't think it's about poverty. It's about celebrating life despite your status.
And celebrating resilience and celebrating the family bonds that these people in this really strange part of Louisiana live.
Louisiana.
This movie really takes you into this community, and it's unlike anything you'll see this year, for sure.
And the flood is clearly inspired
scary.
By Katrina, even to the point that the entire town is taken away to a relocation center by the authorities, and they have to stage a jailbreak to get the heck out of there. They want to go home.
Actually, a gal named Lucy Alibar wrote a play, and the screenplay was adapted from that play.
You can't imagine what that play would have been.
I can't imagine this movie being a play. I mean, I knew that, but I was like, what?
If our listeners have seen Beasts of the Southern Wild, our phone number 816-235-2888. Let's go to Verna from Overland Park. Verna, what did you think of it?
Well, I saw it, and I thought it was extremely powerful, but I have a couple of comments. First of all, it was shot with handheld cameras, I'm assuming.
Yes.
It jumps around. Part of it's out of focus. And I thought I was doing fine with it, although I get nauseous easily. But when I stood up to leave, it was like, uh-oh. And the person I was with, about a quarter of the way through, had to cover her eyes. She said, I can't watch this anymore. I'm getting too sick to my stomach. I can listen to it. The other comment I have is the fact that when you said you didn't know what happened to her mother, I think the whole thing is done through the eyes and the thought processes and the information available to an 8-year-old. Or was she 6 or 8?
6.
Like that. 6. But she didn't know. All she knew about her mother was what her father had told her. So she had all this imagination. And all she knew about the world and the bigger world was what the teacher. I assume that woman was a teacher. They went to that little school-like thing.
Bathsheba, I think, is the character's name.
Right. And she had schooled her in the ways of global warming and she was kind of an earth mother type. So I think that's why she fantasized perhaps that these polar caps were melting and the animals were all frozen. So I think the whole thing was intended to be from the inside of an 8-year-old mind.
Right. Well, Verna, with that caveat, would you recommend it or not?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was powerful. I thought it was wonderful.
Wow.
I did kind of wish at some point a little of the jumping around of the cameras would have calmed down. But.
Right.
You know, I absolutely agree with you. That's something I forgot to bring up. But with a 16-millimeter camera and the confines of the sets that they had created, it was very difficult. But I agree. I mean, it should have been a steadier cam than it was, and it did get to me a couple of times.
Well, sometimes movies start out that way, so you get the idea, and then they'll kind of calm down toward the middle and the meat of the movie, and then come back later, I think, right?
Well, Verna, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And, Bob, I think you gave this a B+ at ButlerCinemaScene.com.
Yeah, and the more I think about it, the more I would probably raise that. I'll tell you what. Do you remember Kerr, the theater critic for the New York Times, and his wife was the novelist? I can't even remember her name, but she wrote "Please Don't Eat the Daisies." Anyway, he said that he could always tell when he took his wife to the theater by the look on the theater manager's face that they were going to lower the review several notches because the critic brought his wife. And in my case, my wife was with Steve. She didn't much like the movie. And possibly
might have factored into it.
Yeah. I think now, thinking about it, I'm going to have to go see this movie again. I might have to kick that up a bit.
So you recommend it.
Oh,
Cynthia recommends it.
I recommend it. It didn't make my 3 to see because of the last half hour and because, except for the little girl, I think all of these non-professional actors aren't very good. And, and that distracted me.
Mm-hmm. For people living in Lawrence, it'll be opening at Liberty Hall August the 10th.
Okay. Let's grab a couple phone calls and go back to our conversation earlier about Google Fiber and what it means for filmmakers and for consumers. Gabrielle from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning. Are you there? Let's go to JR from Kansas City, Missouri. JR, good morning.
Good morning, all. I've been dealing with the speed changes on all kinds of computer stuff for years and years. And the best thing I can say what it's going to do for us, everybody's seen since TV went to digital, how when you get a poor signal, you're not getting a whole lot of data, and the screen will break up into blocks and go blank and freeze, all that kind of stuff. I think that's going to be pretty much eliminated for any of the streaming stuff that you're seeing. And the other thing is I've got inside my house network, I've got gigabit speeds inside my house. And I can stream a full HD from one computer to another with, you know, no lag, no anything. I haven't got Blu-ray here at the house, so I don't know whether that much information will come across. But I think it's going to make the blockies on movies go away for us.
Okay. So you recommend all this then?
Yeah, I recommend that right now when you buy a movie, you may get two or three languages hooked up with it, you know, on the alternate channel.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll be able to supply all the alternate languages that are available. As, you know, no difference to you until you try to listen in that language.
Okay. JR, thank you for the phone call. I appreciate it. Let's go back to Gabrielle, who's called back from Kansas City, Missouri. Gabrielle, go ahead.
Hi, this is Gabrielle. Sorry, we got disconnected earlier. I just wanted to make a comment. I was a little dismayed by your guest naysaying the Google. We watch internet TV in our house. We gave up cable TV, and we have cable internet, and we have to a lot of buffering when we watch Netflix. So I'm looking forward to Google.
Ah, okay.
I'll take comments off the air. Comment working, guys.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay. Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation about some of the latest art, independent, and documentary films now showing. We'll turn to Headhunters. We'll talk about To Roam With Love, Woody Allen's latest, and a film that will have, a lot of conversation, Margaret. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Are back. If you missed yesterday's conversation about Abraham Lincoln's interpretation of the Constitution, it's an interesting one. News about Google Fiber's rollout and a whole lot more. You'll find it on our weekend to-do list at kcur.org. Well, here, today we're talking about with our art, independent, and documentary film critics about the latest films now showing. Cynthia Haynes is with us, so is Steve Walker and Bob Butler. Let's turn to a film here, Headhunters. Steve Walker, it's an amusing Norwegian thriller about a corporate headhunter who steals to maintain his lavish lifestyle.
Yeah, sounds he's a like headhunter. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's a headhunter for rich corporations, really successful people. And he, in interviewing these people that he's apparently, ostensibly going to place, they notice this ostentatiously hung art all over his office. And so he starts this conversation that sounds genuine about art. And the other people eventually reveal what art is hanging in their homes. So he sets it up with a friend who works for a security home security system and swaps out the art that he steals with a fake
reproduction.
Yeah. So lifelike that they can't really.
Well, no, actually, the point he makes is that he prints them off the internet, the reproductions.
Oh, he does.
And
oh.
he hangs them, and people don't even look closely at their own art. It may be months before they realize they've been robbed.
But what happens is it just gets more interesting and intricate. His wife's interested in this other man who happens to have a Rubens, I believe, hanging in his house. And so he's motivated not only by the art he wants to steal, but by the fact that his wife has an eye for someone else. He's very short. He's got kind of a Napoleonic complex.
Mm-hmm.
But it starts to move, and it gets really violent, and the guns come out, and the kidnappers and the thugs, and it's written by Norwegian writer Joe Nesbø, who is, people have believe, is like the successor to Stieg Larsson, who wrote the Dragon Tattoo trilogies. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I thought it was wonderfully entertaining.
They're referring to this new genre as Scandi Noir.
Scandi Noir.
Scandinavian.
I like that.
What's interesting about this is that you can compare this to Hitchcock and some of the twists and turns, especially,
right.
and not to mention a Roadrunner cartoon, because like Wile E. Coyote, our hero goes through some of the, he just gets beat up and beat up, mm-hmm. and I don't even want to talk about the outhouse sequence. But anyway,
right.
He is not a likable guy. He's
no.
kind of a creep. He's sort of a little sleazeball, but he almost becomes heroic in the course of fighting people who are even worse than he is. And
I wrote that very thing, Bob. I said his swagger comes off as cocky and insecure, but by middle of the movie, as he's fighting to maintain his breath,
his life, basically,
you really kind of root for him. You really do.
Now, not that there's really much of a comparison, but I was thinking of the Thomas Crown Affair as I was watching this film. But it is much more violent, much more to the point, much more realistic than Thomas Crown Affair, which was one of my all-time favorite movies.
And it has a couple of twists that you did not see coming.
Oh, yeah.
And guess what? Big surprise. Rights to the U.S. remake have been purchased.
I could see
already.
That coming 10 minutes into the movie. Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's real.
Yeah.
If you liked the Dragon Tattoo films,
then see this,
especially
yeah.
the Swedish ones, yeah. you're going to love this movie.
So all three of you like this film.
Oh, yeah. It's great.
Like.
Yeah.
Headhunters, very strong opinions about that film. How about the Woody Allen film, which a lot of critics don't have such strong feelings about, To Rome with Love, Bob Butler?
Well, I am one of the world's great Woody fans. Sorry, folks, this one didn't do it for me. Mm. I felt like he was treading water. It's set in Rome. In recent films, Woody's been getting money from foreign people who say, make a movie here. So he does. And he made the one in Barcelona, Christina Barcelona, which was fantastic.
Terrific.
He's made a couple
great.
In London that were point match or match point.
Countries are actually paying him to come over to.
That's where the money comes from.
Country.
Investors say, come make a movie, make it here. And he's doing it. Now, Rome is the eternal city. It's a beautiful city. It's got beautiful people and beautiful, you know, settings. But this film is a collection of they're not even interlocking. They're mostly independent little vignettes that don't add up to much, in my opinion. I would have liked to have seen I would have liked to, at some point, to have felt a through emotion, something that connected all these. Some of them are kind of straightforward. Some of them are absurd, as in the case of Roberto Benigni, who is an office drone who suddenly becomes famous for no reason, and then is just as quickly fame is yanked away from him.
And that's, I think, the cleverest bit in the whole movie.
And it's really out of sync with the rest of the movie, almost.
Right.
We have a clip. You might be interested in this. We've got Jesse Eisenberg, late of The Social Network, plays an American who lives in Rome with his American girlfriend, but her... Talk about miscasting. Her seductive girlfriend, played by Juno's Ellen Page, comes to visit. And fresh-faced girl next door, Ellen Page. Mm-hmm. Anyway. And sure enough, after his girlfriend has talked this girl up, Jesse finds himself falling for her. So here we go.
How would you feel if I kissed you?
Oh, that is a non sequitur.
Oh, Little Miss Shocked. Didn't you see that 2 minutes ago? She popped a tic-tac. What do you think that's about?
I'm serious. What would you think?
I would think that you're living with my best friend.
Yeah, this is true. And yet, I can't stop myself.
Oh, that's not good.
Why, you didn't like it?
No, I liked it, and that's what's not good.
Voice in there. That was Alec Baldwin, who plays an American architect vacationing in Rome, whom we are led to believe is this Jesse Eisenberg character as a middle-aged man.
Hmm. So I didn't know what he was, a ghost or whatever, but he's the only interesting thing in the movie is Alec Baldwin.
I'm not particularly a Woody Allen fan, but I have to say Midnight in Paris was a rather clever film.
Very.
There are lots of fans out there who enjoyed that movie. You will be terribly disappointed if you go to see this film expecting that
level of creativity.
Exactly.
Right.
Everybody's disappointed at this film, but the cast here is pretty incredible. Well, no one has mentioned Penelope Cruz yet, by the way.
She's fun, I guess. Oh, she plays a prostitute. I mean, he totally just objectifies
and
her.
There's some horrible...
Nothing you've ever done, Mr. Kraske.
Okay. Yeah.
No, but Bob's right. None of these stories interlock. None of them are interesting. Mm. The worst one is Woody's... an opera director, his character, and he meets this man at a mortuary who sings beautifully in the shower. So he sets up concerts where there's a shower on stage. That is so unfunny.
Now, get this. This just goes to show you what this, you know, being a critic is all about, is that sometimes you'll sit and say, did we watch the same movie? David Denby in The New Yorker said... To Roam with Love is light and fast with some of the sharpest dialogue and acting that Woody has put on the screen in years. And I'm going, no,
it's not.
No, this is a review of some other film.
Most horrible. Critics, though, have been very critical of this
film. They have. I mean, I think it's plodding, it's boring, it's trite, and absolutely ridiculous.
He was struggling to come up with anything clever this time, right?
I'm a huge Woody fan, too. I mean, Manhattan made me want to look at films in a different way.
Right.
So he's been important in my
Roam
life.
With Love.
But not this one, though.
Well, if you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking with our film critics about the latest art, independent, and documentary films now showing. Let's go to some films currently available on DVD. This first one up is Margaret, an emotionally complex teenager struggles with tragedy.
Okay, this is a film that some people are calling a masterpiece, one of the greatest movies ever made.
Wow.
It is...
Why have I not heard of it?
Because it was filmed in 2006 and never released in Kansas City.
Among the producers are Anthony Minghella and Sidney Pollack, both of who have been dead for 5 years.
Right.
Okay.
It's tied up in lawsuits. It's written and directed by Kenneth Lonergan. We want to get to the story. He made You Can Count on Me, one of the best
fantastic
indies of the last decade.
With Ruffalo and
Laura Linney.
Right.
So this film was finished in 2006, caught up in lawsuits because Lonergan wanted a longer cut and the producers weren't so thrilled. On the DVD that Bob purchased, you can watch both.
Yeah, the Blu-ray has both, a three-hour version and a two-hour, 20-minute version.
So Cynthia rented it from a video store. I bought it on Time Warner on demand for $4.99, and we all saw the two-hour and 40-minute version.
Okay.
Can we play this scene it's in the first 8 minutes, and then we'll talk about it from there. It's about a teenage girl who witnesses a horrific bus crash. Allison Janney has been hit by a bus. And this is in the first 8 minutes. We're not giving anything away. Let's listen to that.
Call an ambulance. Everybody just step back.
I'm calling one right now.
Get an ambulance.
Hear me? Someone's calling one.
Ma'am, can you hear me? Can you hear me?
I don't know. Where am I?
On Broadway and 75th Street.
Broadway between 75th and 74th Street.
Who are you? My name is Lisa.
What do you mean? Am I dead?
No, you're not dead. You're in a traffic accident, but you're going to be okay.
I don't have a direct address. She's out in the street. What do you mean? What happened?
You were run over by a bus.
You got to be kidding me. A bus?
Yeah.
Is there a doctor?
Where am I now?
An ambulance is on its way.
Is it still happening?
No, I mean, yes, the accident's over. I think you're a little confused.
I'll say I'm confused.
Here, let me try to see if
I can. No! Don't let go of me!
Wow.
The young girl is Anna Paquin.
Anna Paquin, who's great. She dies, this Allison Janney's character, 4 minute, great performance in 4 minutes, dies in Paquin's arms. She goes home, and she's been flirting. She was flirting sort of with the bus driver played by Mark Ruffalo.
And distracting him.
Distracts him. He runs a red light, runs over Janney. Okay, now that is important to set up the whole rest of the film, which is about how young people in today's society deal with horrible things, guilt, et cetera. You guys can chime in.
I think
it's a wonderful.
This is a story of a young woman learning she is not the center of the universe.
Oh my God! Yes, yeah.
And the whole thing is she at first she lies out of guilt and to protect the bus driver and says that he didn't run a red light. Later she starts feeling guilty and launches a lawsuit against the bus company, and her motives are always in question. Is she doing this in order to salve her own conscience? Does she want to get money for the survivors? There really aren't any. So why go through all the grief and misery of this? There are some great side stories here, too.
Yeah.
She has a relationship with a young boy, Kieran Culkin. She has another one with one of her teachers, played by Matt Damon. She teams up with
Matthew Broderick.
She teams up with one of the dead woman's friends. Jenny Berlin, whom I don't think I'd seen since The Heartbreak Kid way back when,
she's great.
Who is a classic New York woman, just fantastic to launch this lawsuit. Her mother, who is played by the director's wife, is an actress opening on Broadway and having a kind of tentative affair with a foreigner played by Jean Reno. I mean, this thing is loaded with talent.
And my friend of mine, I saw the film with, has a niece who's about Paquin's age in the film. She's probably, what, 16?
I think so, yeah.
Her character. He said it was painful to watch because his niece is very dramatic. The world revolves around me. And we watch when Paquin first goes home, she's covered with blood, and her little brother sees her and says, "What happened to you?" She goes, "Nothing," slams the door. And no one, and she's just puts it behind her for, what, a couple weeks?
Yeah.
Until the guilt starts to bubble up.
And it is very moving. It's profound. It's interesting to watch. My question is, and I really have no right to make judgments here about Lonergan, but it just seems that there was a certain amount of hubris on his part about delivering a film of a certain length, and that's when it all started. Like, I can't cut anymore, it's got to be 3 hours, and that's it. And that's why it's taken 6 years for it to even, you know, be available for us to watch, which is a sad state of affairs.
Lonergan is known mostly as a playwright, and in fact, listening to this dialogue, it sounds sometimes more like a theater work than it does a movie. However, I will say this. Cinematically, it's got some absolutely beautiful stuff of New York. There's one scene with a bird flying through the air with skyscrapers in the background, and then the camera captures a jetliner flying behind those buildings, and then it kind of sinks down and a flock of birds flies up. It's gorgeous.
And he places the camera in positions that you really don't expect, and it is a bit disconcerting, and then you think, no, but this is what filmmaking is about.
It's real. It feels real every second of this film.
The
mothers
dialogue,
and teenage daughters who, you know, I wasn't either, but I have seen it in action.
Love,
and
hate.
And
I also think if you're a New Yorker, this would be of particular interest to you. I mean, we floated over that line. Janny's character says, "You've got to be kidding me. A bus?" You know, it's like a New Yorker would say.
"I'm dying because a bus hit me?
And so Damon comes in and out of it. Ruffalo, she goes to confront him at his home, and his wife's played by Rosemary DeWitt. And she's like, "Who is this girl?" I mean, it's like all these little stories eventually come together.
She never stops to think that showing up at a man's house, a teenage girl showing up to talk to a stranger, might freak out the man's wife. I mean, that's how oblivious she is.
And how does this film end? I'm not going to give anything away except to say at an opera, she finally agrees to her mother's nagging about, "Come with me to an opera," and they go, and Paquin is forever moved.
There's some, you know, there's kind of a transcendent thing running throughout this, because while it's talking about this girl and her situation and the people around her, you get the sense that in many ways it's about the entire city of New York. The people he chose for the bus accident, people who are calling the cops, people calling the ambulance, people trying to render first aid and the way they're behaving with each other. Pretty astounding stuff here.
Well, you guys are raving about this.
Raving.
So you all will put it on your 3-to-see list for this week?
Well,
why isn't
it? I guess if we can put a 3-to-see that's not...
Not in a theater.
Okay. Then
This played in New York last fall. Got about a 2-week run. Some of the reviews were incredible, so much so that they brought it back for an additional run, but 20th Century Fox, which owned it, did not give it a widespread distribution. We never got it in Kansas City.
So why can't Jerry put it up at the Tivoli?
In theory, he could. I don't know if he'd want
Jerry
to.
Jerry put it on the Tivoli.
But there are three pending lawsuits right now that are still tying it all up.
Boy, what a shame.
Martin Scorsese actually offered to edit it for free.
Really?
He would be the guy who would bring it down to a size that would
satisfy the distributor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
One more word. The one on Time Warner, or probably Comcast or whatever you have, on demand, as I said, it was only $4.99. We're seeing the 2-hour-and-40-minute version, which is the one Lonergan didn't prefer necessarily. Bob hasn't watched the 3-hour
There's a director's cut on the same DVD or Blu-ray that I got.
What I read about it, because as soon as I watched the film, I went online to see what the 3-hour, how it differed. He loses the score, which is beautiful, and there's all these overheard conversations with people in the background of restaurants and that kind of thing.
That emphasizes the whole New York as a living, breathing entity idea.
I think I prefer I would prefer the one I saw.
By the way, the title
the shorter one.
Yeah, yes. Mm-hmm.
There is no character named Margaret in the movie.
No,
it's, that's a referring to a Gerard Manley Hopkins poem that is
it
read
says,
in her English class.
Margaret,
goodness.
Are You Grieving by Gerard Manley Hopkins. And you can get the poem online, and it does relate to how you deal with grief and pain and loss.
Well, this film that our critics are gushing about is titled Margaret, and the only place to see it is on online or DVD.
DVD.
Yeah, okay. How about some events going on in the film world locally here? Bob Butler, what's happening at the library?
Well, this is it's August. A lot of people are on vacation. So our film series this month is Road Trip. And these are great road trips. They start with It Happened One Night, 1934, a great road trip movie. But we've got Harry and Tonto by Paul Mazursky, David Lynch's The Straight Story about a man traveling across Iowa on a riding mower.
Yeah.
Badlands by Terrence Malick.
Oh, great movie. Yep.
Little Miss Sunshine, Ridley Scott's Thelma and Louise, Bill Murray and Broken Flowers, and Just Because We're Not All That Stuck Up, National Lampoon's Vacation.
Now, who was so clever to come up with these films?
Me!
Yes.
Those show times are at 6:30 on Mondays, 1:30 on Saturdays at the Film Vault in the Kansas City Public Library downtown. Check them out.
What's the film church at Liberty Hall in Lawrence?
Well, I just thought it was a clever idea. Once a month, they have what they call film church. Doors open at 10:30 and the movie starts at 11:30, and everybody gets, instead of going to church, if you don't,
what
you
are
can
they
go,
showing?
A whole variety of different
Blue
things.
Blue Velvet?
Well, the next one's August 26th. Then on our next show, I'll know what the title
Song
is.
Song of Bernadette?
And,
I mean, I don't
know.
Every time we go to a film, it's for a church,
and,
though.
And
right,
a film
guys?
I saw last weekend, Intouchable, Cynthia. What about it?
It's this year's highest grossing foreign language film in North America. It's done extremely well.
It's a good film.
Do you like it?
Yeah. I did like it.
I do want to mention that the Tivoli Performing Arts Series begins August the 5th, which is a Sunday at 1:30. And will be repeated Wednesday, August the 8th, also at 1:30. And Rudolf Nureyev's legendary remastering of La Bayadère Dance by the Paris Opera Ballet will be presented at the Tivoli.
The only problem with The Untouchables for me was the preview of it. You sort of got the sense of the whole film. I sort of saw the preview and sort of knew what the film was. You know,
right, right.
It almost
right.
told
Gave
me
away
too much information. Yeah, exactly. Some coming attractions, some films I'm really interested in. This first one, Take This Waltz. A married woman has an affair with her neighbor.
It's Michelle Williams, who's been nominated 3 times for an Oscar in her short career, is married to Seth Rogen. I know that sounds like an odd pairing.
Wow.
But she falls in love. She loves her husband. She falls in love with a guy down the street who's more traditionally romantic looking. And it opens next Friday.
Well, it was directed by Sarah Pauli, who's away from her in 2007 with Julie Christie, I thought was a fantastic film. This is a very intellectually mature filmmaker who's once again hit a home run, I think. The casting is just brilliant. Michelle Williams is wonderful. And it presents a woman's perspective about sexuality that you don't often get from a male filmmaker.
Sounds
and I think the difference is because Sarah Pauli directed it.
Now, here's a film that gets my motor revving pretty quickly. Neil Young, yet another documentary about the legendary rock and
directed
roller.
Directed, well, you know what?
And I'll be there.
Jonathan Demme, he's reached the point now where he just loves hanging out with Neil Young so much that he'll just, this is his third concert film with Neil Young.
Third one.
Now, this is kind of interesting. It's called Journeys because interspersed between the musical numbers, we have Neil wandering around his old hometown in Ontario. And
boring.
It's no big deal.
Is it? Boring.
Did you see it?
Yeah.
Don't say
no,
that.
No,
Neil Young, Cynthia.
We're not supposed to talk about it yet because it's not. It
musical,
opens on the 10th.
Neil Young is not boring.
The musical numbers are pretty amazing. It's a solo show, and he uses a wide variety of instruments. And, you know, as the possessor of one of the great bad voices in rock and roll, Neil Young knows how to use
True.
That instrument with the songs that he writes, and no one else can do his music that well. So
how
there
does
you
he
go.
Get away with that voice?
I don't know.
I mean,
people used to gripe about Dylan.
Yeah, and he's getting down that.
Well,
but did you see it?
I haven't seen it yet. No, I have not.
Okay. Well, but it does open August 10th at the Tivoli in the Red Bridge. So we'll talk about it next show.
I'll be in the front row. What
August,
else do you want to talk about?
August is good month for people who love documentaries.
Oh,
two of
definitely.
The ones we saw at True False in February are opening at the Tivoli. One is The Queen of Versailles, which is getting rave reviews everywhere
and
it's huge playing.
Huge coverage, too.
And Ai Weiwei, Never Sorry. He is the Chinese artist who designed the birdcage, among other things, but he's he works in every medium imaginable, and he's makes art so controversial and edgy that he's been in put in prison in China and taken away.
And there
away.
Was a news story about him just recently, too.
Yeah, he's still in the news like every month, but it's an amazing two-year look at his life. This filmmaker spent 2 years with him. I think we're trying to get the director on the show. I can't promise that, but we've talked about it.
So there are reasons to live here, is what you're saying. Things to look forward to coming up down the road.
In movie theaters, yes.
Okay, I want to thank you all for coming in. As usual, Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler join us every 3 weeks to review the latest indie documentary and foreign film showing on area screens. Thank you all very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You'll find a complete list of today's films. There are three to see and more information about our show at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Our show's theme music is by Bobby Watson and the UMKC Conservatory of Music Concert Jazz Band. We had help this week from KCUR's Danny Alexander and Kim Noble. The show's produced by Steven Steigman. Have a great weekend, all. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.